This is episode number 524 with number one New York Times best-selling author, Mark Manson. Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, a former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin. Robbins said, whatever you hold in your mind on a consistent basis is exactly what you will experience in your life. Welcome, welcome, welcome. We've got Mark Manson in the house, who is a self-help author, blogger, and entrepreneur. And his blog, markmanson.net, is visited by over 2 million people a month. He is also the number one New York Times bestselling author of the mega hit, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a F***, a counterintuitive approach to living the good life. He's also been featured all over and quoted in the press, including CNN, BBC News, Time, and so much more. And we dive into the counterintuitive approach to living a good life. We talk about the importance of saying no and why you should say no often. Also, why dreams are overrated. And I have a little bit of a debate here with Mark. How self-improvement and success are not the same thing. What to do with the problems that success brings. That's right, success brings problems. And why the character of your self-talk is what really matters. And before we dive in, I want to give a shout out to the fan and review of the week. This is from Adal the Spride, who says, "Woo-wee, a true display of great minds and ideas coming together. These interviews and insights will catapult you to a new heightened level of your true unique greatness. So many tangible tools to implement into your life, business, etc., that will yield you results. You cannot afford to miss these, and give yourself this gift today. Thank you, Lewis, for orchestrating this platform. Bravo." So thank you so much for being the fan and the review of the week. If you guys want a chance to be shouted out on one of the episodes, then go ahead and leave us a review over on iTunes today at School of Greatness. We are less than 1 month away from the summit of greatness. Oh my goodness, guys. We're getting so pumped up here at the Greatness Headquarters because we are putting together a once-in-a-lifetime experience. I'm so jazzed about just putting this together because I wish I was attending it, actually. The amount of individuals we have coming from all over the world are staggering. And the speaker lineup is just going to blow you away. And always, we like to do special surprises. So things that aren't even on the site are going to be happening that are going to blow your mind. So if you haven't signed up yet, we've got about 100 tickets left. Make sure to go to summitofgreatness.com right now to get yours. And I'll see you in a month.
We've all been there. You have a question about your credit card, you call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone if you only had a Discover card. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
All right, let's dive into this. If you have read this book, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a F***, then make sure to tag me at Lewis Howes on Instagram right now on your Instagram story with the link lewishowes.com/524. Have your friends swipe up to listen to it, listen along while you're listening, and let me know what you think of this. And without further ado, let me introduce to you the one, the only, Mark Manson. Welcome, everyone, back to the School of Greatness podcast. We've got Mark Manson in the house. Good to see you, man. How you doing?
It's good to be here.
I'm pumped. I've been learning about your stuff for a while now. You've been writing online for a long time. Amazing articles. You have an amazing website where you publish all your content. And now you have a new book out that is a massive hit already. Big New York Times bestseller. I think it's been on the list for how long now?
Basically since it came out. So like 9 months, eight
months? 9 months. Every single week, or is it dropped off?
Every single week.
9 months. The Subtle Art of Not Giving a F***. A counterintuitive approach to living a good life. Make sure you guys pick it up right now if you haven't got it. We're going to dive into this and a lot more today. I'm super pumped about this. You're good.
Okay.
Super pumped about this. We've got some mutual friends. You're not really out there publicly that much, though, like on social media. You post your stuff, but you're not like...
Yeah. You know? I'm bad at that. Yeah. I'm bad at self-promotion. I'm not... Like, I've just... Yeah, my wife's always bugging. She's like, why don't you use your Instagram account?
Right. You never do.
You have like 30,000 followers. I was like, I should take pictures.
It's funny. You're like, well, when I'm on the New York Times list every week, it doesn't matter, right? You don't have to promote it.
I guess.
When you write that great of a book, it speaks for itself. Very excited about this. Why did you decide to start talking about this? You know, why did you write a book, a counterintuitive approach to living a great life? And a lot of things you say in here I want to get into because I'm like, is it all true or whatever?
I'm excited
about this.
I decided a couple years ago, I really wanted to write a self-help book about pain, because there's a lot of self-help books out there that about positivity and growth and, you know, striving, and I wanted to talk about the sucky things in life. You know, like I wanted to make an argument that, I guess, negative experience or negativity, it matters. Like, you can't just pretend like it's not there. Mm-hmm. You can't just go through your life.
You can't just say positive thinking no matter what.
Like, it's no matter how successful you get, no matter how famous you get, no matter how much money you make, no matter how awesome your relationships are, things are gonna suck sometimes, no matter what. And you're never going to avoid that. And so kind of my starting point with this is like, all right, so let's talk about what it's like to have things suck. And how can we not necessarily get rid of that or solve it, but like just live through it better, suffer better. Basically.
Suffer better.
Yeah.
Do you believe we can end our suffering?
No.
Why not?
Well, I talk about it in the book. I make the point that, you know, pain exists for a reason. Like, we evolve pain for a reason, because it you know, if you think of like a little kid touching a hot stove, like, that's actually a really important experience. It teaches the kid, don't touch a hot stove anymore. Like, that's dangerous,
it's gonna hurt you.
Exactly. And so pain evolved to kind of show us like what's dangerous and what's not, you know, what can threaten us or what could harm us and what doesn't. So pain's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, pain can actually be a very important and beneficial thing, depending on the context and the circumstances. It's a necessity in life, I would argue.
So is I agree that pain is a necessity. Do you think that suffering is a necessity?
Well, are you defining suffering as like the meaning we attach to pain, or like how would you define it?
I would say like ongoing pain.
Okay.
That like, okay, you've touched the stove, you felt the pain for 30 seconds. Do you need to hold and be attached to that pain for the next day or a week or a month and be like, oh, I touched this thing, it hurt, I'm going to hold on to this pain?
I don't think suffering is, it's not, so in a very broad, like, just if we're looking at somebody's whole lifetime, yeah, I think so. Because there's always going to be some things in your life that, you know, say a parent dies, or divorce or something, like, that is going to cause suffering. And I think it's okay for that to cause suffering. Like, I think it's normal. I would argue it's healthy for that to cause suffering, because just the experience of loss, you have to be attached to that pain because it was such an important part of your life. That said, I do think probably a very large percentage of suffering in life, probably a large percentage of the suffering that a lot of us go through is not necessary.
Right.
It's self-invented or it's we create it to make ourselves feel more important or to make excuses for ourselves, things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I learned from a famous meditation instructor, Krishna G, who said that suffering is the obsessive self-centric thinking.
Yeah.
And once we remove the obsessive self-centric thinking, our suffering leaves us.
Yeah.
So we can feel attached to this pain of a divorce or a loss in our life, and we're constantly thinking about ourselves, what we're missing, what we're lacking, what we, you know, we had once that we don't have anymore.
Yeah.
But once we remove that obsessive thinking about what we don't have anymore, the suffering starts to end.
Yeah.
So I think it's a decision, it's a choice that we can make. In any moment, we could hold on to that obsessive thinking and longing for years and be like, I used to have this thing and now I don't have it anymore.
Yeah.
I'm suffering. Or we can be aware and, you know, and say, I'm moving forward.
Yeah.
At any moment.
Yeah.
I think there's a healthy balance to being like, you know, not just moving on when someone dies in the next hour. You
Know what I mean? Like, it's over.
Yeah. There's a grieving and all the process.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, and I spend a lot of the book talking about this. It's not necessarily, you know, the pleasure or pain that's important. It's the meaning that we attach around it. It's like, it's the story that we invent to kind of encapsulate it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're very healthy and positive story, or I wouldn't say they're very healthy stories and meanings that we can create around our pain, and they're very unhealthy stories and meanings we can create around our pain, and there's healthy meanings and stories that we can create around our pleasure or our positive experiences, and there's also unhealthy meaning and stories that we can create around our positive experiences. And so, you know, kind of the whole crux of the book is like, you know, it's just all about that meaning. It's all about what, you know, what values are you choosing? Like, what is like the lesson you're pulling from all these experiences, both your good and your bad?
Yeah.
Because that's what matters. You know, if you just look at feeling good versus feeling bad, everybody's life is doing this all the time. You know, what stays constant and what like kind of keeps your center of gravity, like going the right direction, is that sense of meaning or those values that you build for yourself.
Yeah, I agree. What would you say is the time where you suffered the most?
Oh, man. I guess I would say consciously. Consciously, I think my first girlfriend, that first heartbreak.
That's the worst.
Yeah. And just the way it happened. I mean, she was cheating on me, and I found out from like, just this, like one of her friends just picked up the phone and was like, dude,
oh man,
you need to know about this.
Oh.
So yeah, that was devastating. So that was the biggest conscious pain. Biggest unconscious one would probably be my parents' divorce, but that's one of those things that you don't realize till you're like 26 and in therapy and you're wow, this really f***ed me up.
Exactly. No, I hear you.
Yeah.
It's crazy how powerful our parents' relationship affects us without us even knowing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like the things we do, say, mimic without us even being aware.
Yeah.
Even if we don't think we're being like our parents, we usually are.
Yeah.
It's just embedded in our brains, I guess, right? In our memory, in our psyche, whatever it is. And we repeat, I see myself doing this all the time. I'm like, all the things that I was like, I'm not going to be that way. My dad is, my mom is.
Yep.
And I see like a pattern sometimes of me doing it. I have to stop myself. Yeah. Like, who do I want to be?
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to be, I want to be like my parents in some ways, but not everywhere.
Yeah.
Every way. And how can I reinvent the process of a better way, better experience, a better interaction with people than what I saw and mimicked every, you know, as a child. So I definitely agree with that.
Yeah.
You talk about, you went on a journey. You traveled over 60 countries.
Yep.
You speak 3 languages. You were in Brazil for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Met your wife there. What are the other languages? Spanish?
Spanish, but it's really rusty.
So Portuguese, you're better.
Yeah, I'm better at Portuguese now.
And your wife, do you guys speak Portuguese a lot, or does she speak English fluently as well?
Oh, she's fluent in English.
Yeah.
I'd say it's like 80-20 English-Portuguese.
Yeah.
Anything like serious is in English. We flirt in Portuguese.
Oh, really? You're like,
we flirt and we
obrigado.
We very good.
Right?
we flirt and talk shit in Portuguese.
Really? That's
yeah,
funny.
Because it's nice because like you'll be in a situation and it's like, you know, somebody like does something and you want to say something, but you don't want them to hear. And so we just say it to each other. We're like, wow, can you believe that guy just did that?
Until they start speaking to you in Portuguese. Yeah, right. Like, I can hear you.
That's happened a couple of
times. Really?
Yeah.
That's embarrassing.
Yeah. There was actually, the funniest one was we were in Brazil once. Mm. And we did like the worst Uber driver ever. And my wife, like she was in a really bad mood. And she just like starts talking shit about the Uber driver in English. Like 5 minutes.
No way.
And then we get to the destination. The Uber driver turns around, perfect English, no accent. It's like, have a good night, guys.
Oh my gosh.
Like, oh God.
One star rating.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, this guy hates us.
Oh
so much.
My goodness. Wow.
Yeah.
Now, why did you decide to travel to, you know, all these different countries and explore the world?
I read Tim Ferriss's book back in 2008, I guess.
Yep, me too.
You know, completely blew my mind, opened everything. And I always had kind of a dream of like doing like an around the world trip or something. And it was when I read that book, you know, around the same time I had a crappy day job and I wasn't happy with it and I was young and I knew I wanted to do something on my own. And I read 4-Hour Workweek and it was like, two birds with one stone. It's like, whoa, I can like
travel and build a business.
And build a business at the same time. And so, yeah, I did that. Initially, I was just going to do it for a couple of years, but I kind of got hooked.
Really?
And just kept going and going and going. Yeah.
And how were you able to make money as you were traveling and fund this experience for you?
Initially, I started with, I did kind of like direct marketing stuff. Uh-huh. So a lot of like affiliate sales and, I was one of those obnoxious guy. I was like spammy stuff. And,
sure.
And I actually started blogging. It was because back in those days, it was like everything was about like blogging was like the big new thing.
Huge.
Yeah.
2008, 2009.
It's like if you're starting an internet business, you got to have a blog because that's how you get traffic to come in and everything. Uh-huh. So I started a blog just to like drive traffic to some of my sites and it started to take off.
Really?
And it turned, like I discovered, it took about 2 years, I discovered I was a pretty crappy marketer. Like I don't sell stuff very well.
Right.
And I was always broke and like struggling and trying to find like the next thing that would pay the bills. And then when I started writing, like things got a lot more steady and consistent. So I just stuck with the writing.
It's crazy, man. Now you get what, 2 million visitors a month, or is it probably more now from the book, I'm assuming?
Well, it varies quite a bit.
It's interesting because blogs, I feel like the traffic is just going down in blogs because everyone's on social.
Yeah.
It's like more and more people aren't clicking on the link to go read a whole article. They'd rather read like a mini article on Facebook or Instagram.
I feel blogging is in kind of like a recession right now.
Really?
Yeah. It's across the board, everybody's traffic's kind of shrinking a little bit. Mine's dropped maybe 20-25%. In the last year.
Wow.
But like I know people, it's dropped like 50%.
And people are struggling, I feel like.
Yeah.
If you're not constantly reinventing yourself, like I think it was brilliant that you did this book at this time because it brought you even more mainstream credibility.
Yeah.
And it continues to attract new people to your sphere of your audience and people checking out your site now or your social, which you're never on Instagram, so you need to be more of. But I think it's powerful because I think most people aren't willing to reinvent. And you were doing the internet marketing spammy thing for a little bit. And if you kept doing that, you would have probably dropped off too.
Yeah.
But you found a way to reinvent with blogging.
Yeah.
And you stuck with that until you realize, oh, let me do the next stage.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think that's always important. I was kind of in a similar spot. I was starting out in blogging. I was teaching LinkedIn. And I was like, it's just kind of dying. And then I did blogging. Then I did courses. And I was like, I felt like podcasting was going to come around. I was like, hopefully, you know.
You're in the right space now, man.
It was like a 2 years before it kind of started getting big when Serial came out and everyone else started to do them.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, thank goodness I started early.
Yeah.
But it's almost like now there's, you know, over 500,000 podcasts at least.
Yeah.
So it's like, what's the next reinvention?
Yeah.
I'm always looking for the next reinvention. So
yeah, you got to. You got to keep looking ahead. And yeah, I think looking back at my career, one of the things that I think I did well, and I think most people need to do, you know, throughout their career, is be very honest at like what you're good at, what you're bad at, mm-hmm. And then double down on what you're good at.
Yeah. So you didn't start doing video after you launched your blog. You were like, I'm great at writing.
Yeah.
It's working. Let me double down.
Well, yeah. And I've tried video. I even messed around, tried podcasting a few years ago. And, you know, I'm very honest with myself of like, you know, is this something either, do I have a knack for it? Mm-hmm. Or is this something, is the learning curve something I'm willing to invest? Like, does it make sense? You know, so for instance, with podcasting, I messed around with it, did a couple like interviews privately and played with like concept ideas. And as with most things, you know, you go into it thinking it's, oh, this is going to be simple. And then you actually try it and you're like, wow, this is really
a lot
hard.
Of work. Yeah.
And so I sat there and I'm like, well, this is going to be, you know, probably 6 to 12 month learning curve.
Yeah, at least.
Yeah. And
it's going to take time to build momentum.
Yeah. And is that something that makes sense to invest in right now? Or I could just like promote my book.
Right.
You know, the book won out. It's hard, but it's hard to be like honest with yourself a lot of times. And just be like, yeah, I'm bad at this.
Right.
I should.
Yeah, we don't want to be bad at
stuff. I should do the thing I'm good at.
Right. You talk about being honest with yourself publicly and why it's powerful.
Yeah.
Why do you believe we should be honest with ourselves publicly? And what does that mean?
I'm a big proponent of just vulnerability in general. Mm-hmm. And so,
man.
Yeah.
Amen.
And so that applies across the spectrum. So our private relationships, our public relationships, professional relationships, mm-hmm. everything. And the thing that makes vulnerability so important and so powerful is that it creates a transparency and a trust between everybody involved. You know, when you're willing to expose your weaknesses or at least be honest about them, it helps people know that you're dependable. You know, it's like, oh, okay, this guy, like, I can trust something that comes out of his mouth. Mm. If you're trying to make everything like rosy and sound amazing all the time, and maybe fibbing a little bit or covering things up or like avoiding certain topics,
right.
You know, people sense that. And and not only does it kind of prevent that trust from building, but it also.
One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. So listen, we all know life is full of yada yada, like those quote unquote free trials that somehow still charge your card for something, or when companies have those sneaky gotchas hiding deep in the fine print. And I know you've dealt with yada yada before, like those bills that keep going up and up for no reason at all, or when budget airlines promise a cheap fare but then charge you for every little thing until you realize you're paying more than you would have somewhere else. And yes, it is possible to outsmart yada yada, like triple checking airline deals to make sure all you need is already included, but you don't take yada yada in life. So don't take yada yada from your wireless provider. Metro by T-Mobile has no contracts, no credit checks, no surprises, and nada yada yada. Stop by one of over 6,000 Metro stores nationwide.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
So, you know, it makes you seem like aloof. I don't know. It kind of just interferes with the depth of the connection. The connection can never like get beyond a certain
depth. It's like something's
depth.
Missing if someone's too perfect, you know?
Yeah,
there's
exactly.
Something beneath that because no one can live that way.
Yeah. The example, I use an example in my book. I'm like, you know, nobody likes a yes man. And yet, like, if somebody's following you around just agreeing with everything you say, you know, within a couple of weeks, you're going to be like, what does he want? You know, like, what's his angle? He's trying to get something out of me.
Sure.
And, you know, so I have a chapter. It's called The Importance of Saying No. Mm. And, you know, and that's kind of my big point is, like, you need to hear no and say no, because then people know you're dependable. They know you're actually, like, you know, you have your own identity and you're not just, like, manipulating the situation.
Yeah. I think it's powerful to say no. I say yes a lot to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And then sometimes people just expect me to constantly say yes. And I'm like, no, I can't do something. And then they get mad at me.
Yeah.
Because they have this expectation I'm supposed to do something for them all the time. And I'm like, I'm constantly giving to so many people.
Yeah.
I'm constantly, like, promoting other people. I'm constantly, you know, doing so much that sometimes I got to focus on my own stuff too.
Of course. You know what I mean? Of course. Well, and if you don't, then that will strangle your ability to give
absolutely
in the future. So, you know, like, if you don't cut out that time for yourself and then nurture yourself, then you're not going to be able to to be generous to others.
And I think if you say yes to someone when you don't want to, you're going to resent that person too.
Totally.
So say no so you don't resent people.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
You also talk about, this is something I wanted to dive into, because you say you shouldn't have big dreams, right?
Yep.
Why?
Well, did I say shouldn't have big dreams?
I think you talked about big dreams and how you can't be in the present when you have these big dreams.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of exactly.
Maybe I don't have the same. Maybe I'm not thinking clearly on it, but what are your feelings on having big dreams? Should we have them or no?
I think they're fine. Mm-hmm. I think dreams. So dreams I would put in the category of they're fine, but they're overrated.
Dreams are overrated.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Because I think a lot of times we use our dreams and our fantasies as a way of kind of escaping what we're dealing with right now. And I think the other thing about dreams is it's actually very hard for us to know exactly what we want. Like, I can't tell you how many people I've met over the years that they're like, I want to run a business, or I've got this amazing idea for a startup, or I want to make a ton of money. And, you know, they have this big dream for themselves and they start working towards it. And it's like, they make themselves, like, it's actually making them miserable, because the actual process of doing it, is not what they enjoy. They enjoy the, and what is actually happening is, like, you know, they don't actually enjoy the hustle or taking the risk or doing the work. They enjoy what they think the benefit will do to themselves, you know? So they're unhappy with a part of themselves. They're like, oh, if I could just, like, have an amazing startup and be worth like $20 million, everything would be great. Yeah. But it turns out that, like, they hate working on it. And so it just makes things worse. And so, I think dreams are fine. Like, it's fun to fantasize, but I think it's also important to just be honest about what dreams are, is that they're fantasies. They're fun. But a lot of them are motivated, or they can easily be motivated by the wrong reasons. And so I prefer to kind of take more of a present approach of, like, okay, let's pay attention to, like, how does this feel right now? How does the work make you feel now? How does accomplishing this task, like, how does that reflect on you? Like, how do you feel about yourself after that? Because I think if you pay attention to that, that's actually what makes great things happen in your life, is when you're, like, focusing on the day to day, you know, boom, this makes me feel good. That's what you get good at, you know? Like, I never sat down, you asked me before we started recording, you're like, did you ever think you were going to be a writer? I never thought I was going to be a writer. The way I became a writer was I was doing all this stuff for my websites and I didn't enjoy about 70% of it.
Right.
And most of the part that I enjoyed, or that came easily to me, that, you know, that part of my work that I would sit down, you know, thinking, oh, I'll spend an hour on a blog post, and I look up and it's been like 6 hours.
Mm, you lost yourself in it.
Yeah, like, that was the writing. Mm. And so I didn't even know, it was never a plan. It was never like, oh, I'm going to be a New York Times bestseller in 5 years, and I'm going to do this and this. And it's like, no, it's just like, writing makes me feel really good. I feel proud of myself. I enjoy the process, and I can't wait to do it again. And so, you know, that's what you just keep hammering on. And at the greatness is the side effect. You know, it's like if you find that, then the success and all the accolades and stuff like that will come naturally. Like it'll be the collateral.
Right. Exactly. I hear you, and I'm excited to talk about this because there are so many people that tell me that they have these big dreams or what they want, but they're unwilling to do the work.
Right.
It's too hard to make it happen. They want the end result, but they don't want the 10 years of the process it takes to get there. And I have an exercise called the perfect day exercise where I have people say, okay, do you really want this? Walk through what a perfect day would look like for you, where you'd find the most joy, the most happiness, the most fulfillment in your entire day. Hour by hour, walk me through what does your perfect day look like?
Yeah.
What brings you that joy? So I try to get people in the mindset of, okay, dream like crazy big dreams.
Yeah.
But make sure the journey and the process of spending 10 years to make it happen is something you love. Because it may take forever.
Yeah.
The bigger the dream, the longer it's going to take usually.
Yeah.
And if you go through your perfect day exercise and you're actually not excited to work 12 hours a day on something, then it's probably not the dream for you.
Yeah. And it comes back to that honesty with yourself. Yes. Like the example I use in my book is, you know, for most of my younger life, I wanted to be a musician. And I had all these huge dreams and fantasies, you know, about being on stage and rocking out and like, you know, being like having this amazing album. And I mean, I had this dream for like 6 or 8 years, like even after I started my business. You know, when I started my business, the first couple of years, I was like, oh, I'm going to do this to like make some money. And then I'm going to go back and do the music thing.
Wow.
You know, in my head, it was all just kind of like a means to the end of, that was the music. And I got to my late 20s, or the second half of my 20s, and I had to be like really honest with myself, like because I had friends who were back in music school and they were actually doing things, like they were, their bands were getting signed and they were like doing studio gigs and they were playing shows, and I was like, wait a second, they're actually like outdoing it.
Yeah, you know, taking like, action.
I've been sitting in my room for the last 6 years, like saying, you know what I'm going to do one day? I'm going to be a big musician on stage. So like, I had to be very honest with myself of like, you know, like, I don't think I actually like this. Like, you know, because if I did, I'd be doing it.
Right.
You know, I think I just like the vision of myself. I like this fantasy that, you
being
know,
on stage, but you don't like practicing for 3 hours a day, right? Playing guitar or piano or something.
Yeah, or spending all my money on equipment and like hauling it through rehearsals and, you
getting
know, like,
7 people to show up for a gig once a month for like years. You
exactly.
Know?
Like, it didn't happen.
No one care about you.
You know, so it was hard to let that go. But I mean, I think in hindsight, I built that dream. That dream was like something that I kind of constructed when I was younger to get me through some hard times.
Uh-huh.
And once I got older and I was actually committed to my business and my writing and other things in my life, I had to let it go. I had to be like, you know, this isn't serving me anymore. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it's like I'm kidding myself.
your mind space is somewhere else. In fantasy land that you're not actually implementing and taking action on, as opposed to putting all of your energy and mind space into the current passion or dream that you did have, right?
Absolutely.
And we only have so much mind space in a day, I think.
Yeah.
In our lifetime.
And totally.
If we're thinking about something else we're not working or acting towards, then we're missing out on what we have right in front of us.
Yeah.
You talk about self-improvement and success and how they often occur together, but that doesn't mean they're the same thing.
Yeah.
So why do we assume they are?
I think because they often occur together. I think a lot of us experience in our own lives when we have a breakthrough with ourselves, you know, with certain belief or certain pattern in ourselves, or we get over a fear. We see kind of the external success in our lives jump up a little bit, and so we just kind of start assuming that the two are the same thing, which is just, we do that about a lot of things. Mm-hmm. But it's not necessarily. I think in a lot of ways, you know, for certain people, it might be a breakthrough in their self-growth might precipitate like less success. You know, maybe they realize that, you know, the 80 hours a week they're working as a lawyer, like, is the thing that's making them miserable. And so the breakthrough means like giving up that career or giving up all that money or giving up the status that comes along with it. You know, you get people who become very attached to material things, you know, or maybe they don't have their priorities or their attention in their life like aligned the way that it would be more healthy. And part of that growth requires them to step down a little bit and step back. And I think this is one area that, you know, it gets in the self-help world, it gets a little dangerous, because it's fun to think about, you know, hey, you can have this huge breakthrough and make $1 million. But a lot of times that big breakthrough requires you letting go, wanting to make $1 million.
Right.
So you get kind of this weird catch-22 thing going on a lot of times. Yeah.
Yeah. What would you say is the thing that you're struggling with the most right now?
You know, honestly, this, you know, I'm so proud of how well it's done. Dude, the pressure. Like,
the pressure of what? What's next or what's, you know?
It's, you know, we all like to, over the course of our career, I think everybody's like this. Anything you do, you know, the next thing, you always want to be improving.
Of course.
You always want the next thing to be better.
Yes. But you were like 9 months on the New York Times list, right? It's like, how do you top that?
Yeah. And it's sold, I think it's the best-selling audiobook of all time.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it sold 1 million copies in, I think, 8.5 months.
A hardcover?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Congrats, man. That's huge.
And so, yeah, I mean, it's like...
That's massive.
It is massive. But it's funny because now I'm it's been almost a year, and now I'm starting to look at, okay, what's the next project going to be?
And how can I top this massive hit?
Well, and my natural inclination, because this has served me for the first 10 years of my career, is like, all right, what's the next step?
Yes.
And I'm looking at it, and I'm like, you know, let's be honest, you know, the level of commercial success this book has experienced is something that it's like, it happens maybe 2 or 3 times a year in the entire publishing. Like, you know, there's maybe 2-3 books each year that
do that.
That do this.
Maybe.
And as an author, the chance of you hitting that twice,
it's really hard.
Yeah. It's like, it's, you know, and so much of the book's success is probably also out of my control.
I mean, it's a great title. It's a great cover. It's a great timing world. It's like,
yeah, but all, yeah, a lot of it is the timing. A lot of it is just kind of like where we are as a culture right now. And so, yeah, it's, I've had to be honest with myself that, like, you know, it's very unlikely this is going to happen twice. And then on top of that, I've got, you know, publishers, my agent, a bunch of other people who want to do stuff with me. And they're like, all right, you know, you did this.
Let's do something bigger.
Yeah. Let's match it. Or like, hey, this guy just sold this many books for Harper. Like, let's bring him in to do this with us. And, you know, maybe our thing will blow up. And
it's really hard.
It's like the pressure is real, man. And so I've been kind of the last few months.
You gotta listen to your own book, you know?
Yeah.
Just don't give a
fuck. I know. It's hard.
It's hard. So hard, man. Cause then you're like, well, I'm not doing as good.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm not as worthy, or I'm not smart anymore if it's not doing as well. Right.
Exactly. So there's all these kind of like assumptions or, you know, I guess operating principles I've had for years now in my career, and I'm having to like tear them out of myself, you know, kind of be like, hey, dude, let go of that. Like, that's not serving you anymore. And it's been hard. I've for a couple months now, I've kind of been playing mind games with myself, you know, just trying to get myself in the right headspace of like, you know, hey, it's all right if, you know, the next book doesn't have to be like this one, or my next project doesn't have to like match this, and being okay with that.
I mean, 1 million copies in 9 months. I think that's more than what Tim did for 4-hour work week.
Yeah. I
think it took him years to get that.
Yeah. It's
massive.
It's insane.
What about the audiobook? Is there more, how many downloads there, or is that all encompassing all books?
I don't know the exact number with the audiobook,
right.
but, yeah, the Audible people told us back in the spring. They said it's the most downloaded book on
crazy, dude.
And the entire it's Audible
unbelievable.
Site. Yeah, which is like
some nice royalty checks off of those right there. I know what that's like. Dude, this is amazing. I remember when I interviewed Liz Gilbert, she had mentioned similar, because Eat, Pray, Love was like this massive, I think it was like 10 million sales or something. And it was just, it turned into a movie with, what's her name?
Who's the Julia actress? Roberts.
Julia Roberts. Yeah. And she was like, I had Julia Roberts playing me. And it was just everywhere for years. And she was like, there was no way I was going to be able to create something that good.
Yeah.
Like, I had to kind of come to my senses that this might be the most popular piece of work I ever do.
Yeah.
Type of feeling, you know? Maybe something...
Which is hard.
Right?
You always want to think your best thing's ahead of you. And suddenly when you start thinking that it might not be, that starts messing with your motivation. It starts messing with your identity. It starts messing... Like, it's a mind f***. And it's funny you mentioned her because she did a TED Talk about that. I've watched that TED Talk like 3 times this summer. Like,
really?
Yeah, because it's... because like I'm a fan of hers, like she's great, amazing, and I was talking to a friend and she's like, yeah, Liz Gilbert did a TED Talk about like her life after Eat, Pray, Love and how she couldn't write for like a year afterwards because it was just this insane thing that she thought she had to live up to. And so yeah, I watched that talk a couple times, and yeah, it's real. Like it's hard. It messes with your head. It really does.
And then all the people who are not or are struggling right now.
Yeah, they're all like, boo-hoo. Like,
oh, yeah, you sold 1 million copies of your book. Get over it.
So hard, man. Well, that's the other funny thing, too. And I talk about this a little bit in my book. You know, I point out, I'm like, you know, problems never go away. You know, like Warren Buffett still has money problems. You know, he still probably stresses out at night and worries about things. But nobody's crying a tear for Warren Buffett. And, you know, that's kind of the weird thing with success sometimes is success, as amazing as it is and as much as it can transform your life, it brings its own stresses with it. You know, it's like the Biggie song, Mo Money, Mo Problems. Like brings its own set of problems with it. But the thing is when you success problems, like not many people are going to sympathize with that. You know, like not many people are sitting around going, man, poor Warren Buffett, like lost $2 billion on that deal. Like, man, that must be really hard for, like, nobody's saying that. Right. You know, like there's no sympathy for that.
Yeah. The internal challenges that we face as human beings, no matter what happens, the more successful we come, we still have internal battles, challenges, stresses. With all the money in the world, you know, all the friends in the world, all the power, there's still going to be stress.
Yep.
If we don't know how to deal with our inner battles,
yep.
then we're going to be overwhelmed and we're going to suffer.
Yeah.
So it's a constant awareness of letting things go, of working on ourselves, I think, in a positive way where we can enjoy the process and where we're at no matter what's happening in life.
It's a never-ending thing.
Yeah.
It's, you know, another thing I say is you know, growth is not getting rid of problems. It's simply getting better problems. You know, you never get to this point where you don't have problems in your life. You just trade in your problems for slightly better problems.
Right.
Like that's basically what growth is.
You mentioned in the book about, you know, if the problem is you're overweight or you're not healthy and then you go get a gym membership and you have to wake up early and you're like sweaty all the time and you're like, you have a new problem, right? It's like...
But it's a better one.
But it's a better one. You're getting healthy, but you have this other challenge. Well, I have to get up earlier and I have to bring my clothes so I can shower at the gym and get to work on time or whatever it is. So it's like a different set of problems and challenges to get a better result, though.
Yeah.
Right?
Of course.
How do we eliminate problems in our life then? Or can we not?
I don't think you can. I don't think there's such a thing as a problem-free life. And I don't think we would want to eliminate problems, because I make the argument that it's that process of solving our problems or overcoming our problems, that's like the engine that generates happiness. And so when you actually remove problems, it creates its own special kind of misery. You know, like if you imagine like the rich housewife who just sits at the pool all day, like it, or the person who watches TV 10 hours a day, like there's a lack of problems also creates, you know, it prevents that engine of happiness. Because, like, you need the problems, you need the problems because that's what generates the meaning. And if you don't have the meaning, then, you know, everything just feels pointless. And you're like, well, why do anything? Like, I'll just go sit at the pool.
Right.
And so you need that.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
So you need that meaning. You know, it comes back to that, what I was saying about the stories that we wrap around our positive and negative experiences. You know, like that meaning is what creates those powerful stories that pushes us forward and
right.
You know, makes us feel like our life is well lived.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if you have a trust fund and you don't, you know, make meaning with your life, and you just live off the money of someone else,
yep.
It doesn't feel like you've done anything.
Yeah,
you haven't accomplished anything. You haven't mattered in the world. You haven't contributed in any positive way, right?
Yeah.
Contribution is probably one of the most important things for us. Whether Absolutely. We're contributing to our family, our community, or in a bigger way, having that contribution is powerful.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so there are a lot of miserable housewives, right?
Yeah.
Who aren't...
And trust fund kids.
Right, trust fund kids who aren't choosing to use their intelligence, their talents to make an impact.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to have that awareness that we should be trying to make an impact the best way we can.
Yeah, for sure.
Talk about the feedback loop from hell. How do we get it out of it? Or how do we get into it, and how do we get out of it?
So the feedback loop from hell is, it is a thing I talk about in the beginning of my book where we judge our emotions. So, you know, a lot of us, and I know I was raised this way, and I think a lot of people are raised this way. You know, I was raised that like certain emotions, they're inappropriate or they're just bad.
Like what?
Like anger. You know, you don't get angry, or you don't show it, or you don't, you know, don't be sad. Like, how many times has like a well-intentioned friend or family member be like, don't be sad. Yeah. No, just don't be sad. And so I think what the effect this kind of has on us is that we judge these negative emotions. So we decide that being sad is a bad thing, or being angry is a bad thing, or, you know, feeling guilty is a bad thing. And then a funny thing happens, because then we start feeling sad about the fact that we feel sad, or we start feeling guilty that we feel guilty all the time.
Or embarrassed or whatever.
Yeah, or we feel angry that we're angry, or we're anxious that we feel anxious all the time. And like, and then it just kind of like keeps spiraling. We're like, God, what's wrong with me? I'm always anxious. And it just keeps going and going and going. And so I call this the feedback loop from hell. And the way you short circuit it is you stop giving a f- is you stop judging the emotion. You know, sad, like the only way you can get out of it is sadness needs to be okay. Anger needs to be okay. Anxiety needs to be okay. You know, the question isn't, it's not necessarily the emotion that is good or bad. It's what you do about it. It's how you react to it. It's the meaning, you know, you wallpaper around it. Because all these emotions, again, coming back to like the whole pain thing, like all these emotions, they exist for a reason. Like they keep us healthy. Like they are natural responses. If somebody dies, be sad. Like you're supposed to be sad. Like that is part of your brain and your psychology's way of like processing it,
yeah.
Digesting it. And you know, the more you judge or try to like shut those emotions out, like just the worse it becomes.
Yeah. What about self-talk?
Yeah.
What do you think about self-talk? Do you think it's important to have like a positive mindset and to think positive things throughout the day? Or do you think it's irrelevant to feeling happiness, joy, and making an impact?
I think self-talk can definitely have an effect for people, both positive and negative. Like I imagine if you're always telling yourself good things, you probably feel better.
Yeah.
and if you're always telling yourself bad things, you'll probably feel crappy. Mm-hmm. I definitely think that is true. I don't necessarily, you know, again, my big focus is on meaning. It's, you know, I kind of in the beginning of the book, I'm like, you know what? Who cares whether we feel good or bad? Let's talk about like the meaning or the value that like underlies everything. And I think self-talk is one of those things you can get yourself into trouble through positive self-talk just as much as you can through negative. Mm-hmm. You know, what it comes down to is like, how realistic are you being? And like, what is the quality of the meaning that you're putting on this? Because I could walk around being like, I am the most badass mother in all of LA. You know, like that girl wants me, that guy wants to be me. Like, you know, I can have positive self-talk all day, but that's probably not going to have a very healthy effect, you know, if that's what I'm saying. You know, so it's the character of the self-talk is what I think matters. And I think that gets lost a lot. It's more difficult to talk about that. Because I think so many people, they just want that quick hit of like, make me feel good. You know, like tell me something to tell myself to make me feel good. And it's like, you can do that, but like, you really got to pay attention to, you know, what's the meaning and what's the identity you're building for yourself when you do that.
What about belief? How does someone build belief in themselves then in order to create and take action on, you know, something like this? Because I'm assuming you can't write a book this powerful and inspirational and meaningful if you don't believe in yourself. So how do you create belief in yourself?
See, I've got a pretty backwards approach to this. It's probably going to be the opposite of you or most people you have on here, which is it's none of my business whether I'm a good author or not. Mm-hmm. I try not to think about it. Because again, what I notice is if I get led into negative self-talk, that will hinder me because I start thinking like, well, I'm bad at this and I'm an idiot and I can't do this. But if I start wandering off in the positive self-talk, like, oh, I'm the man, like everything I write is gold, you know, that also adds pressure and starts. And like, that's kind of what I was talking about. Like the problem with like, I don't like thinking I'm great at something. I know we're on the school of greatness, but that also, it puts pressure on because now that's something you have to live up to. And I just try to let go of all of that. I just try to say, I don't know if I'm good or not. I don't really care. I have these things that I believe are very important for myself and for others. And I just try to focus on that.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of had an argument recently with my publisher about my next book. You know, like they're pushing.
They're like, this is what we want.
Yeah. It's like they're like that girlfriend or boyfriend that's like already planned like your next six vacations by like the third date. Like that was like happening with the next book. And I kind of freaked out. I'm like, look, this is not helping. I appreciate the amount of support you're giving me, but like, this is just making it worse. Like this is, you know, if every time I get an email like, oh, Harper's like spending this and they're assigning these many people to your sales team. Like, and then I sit there and I go to like, write, I'm like, man,
too much pressure.
Yeah. I'm like, can we just get back to like, let me just focus on the ideas. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to think about, you know, all that sort of stuff. I don't want to define myself.
Right.
By those sorts of things, because whenever I start to, you know, like that, it starts killing my creativity. Mm-hmm. I just try to let go of that.
Yeah.
I've got a section in the book called jokingly kill yourself, which is where I basically tell people to kind of let go of these narratives of them. Like, you don't know how good, like the funny thing about being good or bad at something, it's all about where you're standing, you know? Like, you know, somebody could be watching this and they'd be like, man, Lewis House, he's killing it, you know? And it's like, from their perspective, like the yardstick that they're using, they can say that. But then all you have to do is go get a different yardstick.
Yeah, go like a Warren Buffett and he's like,
yeah, or like Howard Stern or something. Yeah. And it's like, oh, whatever. Lewis House, whatever, man. Like, and so it's all arbitrary. It's all invented. Mm-hmm. And so I try to just like let go of that and get back to like, okay, what is something that's like valuable that I can contribute? Like you were saying, you know, like what's an idea that I think is important, can change lives, can change my life. Write that. And then, you know, let everybody else decide whether I'm good or not.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. It's none of my business.
So what is your vision next? Because, you know, you listen to Liz Gilbert's TED Talk a bunch of times. Are you working on new ideas or are you kind of like, let me just be in the present and enjoy the moment for the year or two that it's going to ride? And then,
man, I wish I could do that. I wish I could do that. I wish I could just like,
I mean, you're probably getting big advance offers for the next book.
Yeah.
Because now you can kind of demand it and say, you know, write the 7-figure checks.
Let's go. I mean, the money, listen, the money's great. No complaints. Yeah. You know, I'm playing with ideas for the next book. I'm kind of exploring new things. I kind of made the mistake I made this year was I got a little excited, you know, all that stuff you just said about big advance checks and all the promotion and everything. I got a little bit excited at the beginning of the year and I was like, yeah, I got this idea. Let's go, you know? And what I discovered a few months later was like, I kind of put myself in a bind because what I discovered is like, or what I remembered is a big part of my creative process is coming up with like 3 or 4 bad ideas before I get to the good one. And so I got a few months in and I'm like, oh, wait, I think this is actually a bad idea. Like, I want to toss the whole, you know, I want to basically start over from scratch. And so that was kind of part of the, you know, telling my publisher, like, dude, back off. Like, I need some time. I need some time to just suck for a while. Like, you know, like I think that's an important part of any creative process. Yeah. Like, you need to be able to fail without repercussions. You know, I told my editor, I'm like, look, like, if I want to, like, delete a chapter or like rewrite an entire section, like I don't want to feel like I can't do that because I think it's important to feel like you can do that.
Yeah, and get back to doing what you do best, which is writing articles, doing research, you know,
absolutely
sharing ideas, see what sticks. An idea sticks online and it shares by everyone. You're like, okay, maybe I can lean into this a little more, write a few more articles on it, and be like, oh, now I've got the basis of my book.
Absolutely.
Have you been writing? I see you've been sharing a lot of the archives over the last few months.
Called out.
You're always like, from the archives, goodie but oldie. You know, you're like, still relevant. I mean, it's all evergreens. It's not like it's timely or something. You know, it needs to be at a certain time. But got to get that traffic, you know?
Yeah, I know.
Are you writing new content or new articles?
So it's funny you bring that up. I've kind of, now that I've gotten all that stuff resolved, you know, this past few weeks, I have been going back. I've been spending the past 2 weeks just like just doing blog content. That's good. And doing exactly what you're saying, like, all right,
back to basics, man.
Yeah, I've got a handful of ideas. I think they're pretty cool. Gonna throw them up as our articles, see what happens, see if it gets people talking, if people are really into it. So yeah, there's gonna be a lot more blog and online content coming over the next few months.
That's great.
Which I feel really good about. I feel like everything is kind of balance is being restored to the force.
Yeah, that's good. So, removing the pressure from the publishers, agents, and all this.
Yeah. I mean, it's just it's been a wild experience. Both, you know, on both sides. Like, it's just it's surreal. Like, it's
amazing, man.
Some like the good things that happen, it's completely surreal and it's just scrambles your brain and then, you know, and then 2 weeks later, it's like pressure you've never felt before because the publisher's like, you know, we're doing this and this, this. It's like, whoa, time out.
Right. What's been the craziest experience you've had since it came out?
Well, apparently Chris Hemsworth is a big fan of it.
I think I saw him. You posted a photo on Instagram of him holding it, I think.
Yeah. So he posted it and it was completely unprovoked. He posted it on Instagram and Facebook. And he wrote this like long thing. I mean, it was like he loved it. I mean, he was just gushing about it. And I was like, that's crazy. Like, how does that happen?
Yeah.
You know? So that's been pretty awesome. Getting stopped on the street.
Yeah.
The first few times was like,
whoa.
Yeah,
weird, right?
Weird. Yeah.
Really weird.
Yeah. Weird stuff. Like, my dad was walking around with the book and somebody's like he in a restaurant, like somebody like came up to him.
Was like, I love that book.
Yeah. And my dad's like, my son wrote it. And the guy's like, yeah, whatever.
That's hilarious. Wow.
Yeah. So it's
and I'm sure you got a ton of big press and features and all these different places, right?
Yeah. I think the F word scared people off.
Ah.
Yeah. So it's been hit and miss in that wow. arena. Which is weird.
Hmm.
You would think they would be like jumping on the bandwagon, but
it's controversial.
Yeah.
Book. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's funny. There was the only time it appeared, it was mentioned in the New York Times. It was basically this old guy complaining about how many books have the F word in the title these days.
Really?
And I was like, seriously? this is what the Times is running?
Wow. But it sounds like it's been an amazing journey.
Yeah, man.
Couple final questions for you.
Sure.
Talk to me about, can anyone do anything great
mm-hmm.
or meaningful from a victim mentality? Or is a victim mentality the quickest way to die?
I think a victimhood mentality, I think by definition, yeah, you can't really, because I think once you adopt a victim mentality, you're basically deciding you're powerless. You were saying, like, this thing is happening to me and there's nothing I can do about it. Like, to me, that's the definition of a victimhood mentality, like deciding you are powerless. And so, yeah, I think it's basically impossible. Mm-hmm. I think the first step to accomplishing anything, big or small, whatever, is acknowledging that you are in control, that you get to decide, that there is this... Even if it's the smallest thing, mm-hmm. you know, I can do this. I can decide to work on this. And it's hard because that requires taking on responsibility, you know, being like, okay, like this is my thing now. Like I have to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's easier and it kind of worries me because I think our culture is getting lulled into this complacency of just being like, oh, all this horrible stuff's happening. But it's not my fault. You know,
yeah.
So I'm just gonna complain about it. And it's like
and do nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like no, you gotta take responsibility, get out there, do something,
take ownership. Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. I think there's a lot of people who are living in that victim mentality. Maybe not in all areas of their life, but in some area of their life, and they're like, "Well, there's just nothing I can do.
Yeah,
I don't have the time, I don't have the energy,
yeah,
resources." It's like, well, you're not gonna be able to do anything if you think that way.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
But if you can create it and say, "I do have the time, let me make it."
Yeah.
I do have the resources. Let me start asking people, you know, whatever it may be.
Yeah. Well, and there are people that something terrible legitimately happens to them, you know? And
all of us, something terrible happens.
Yeah. Like something, it's everybody, we all suffer tragedy and trauma at some point. But that may be, you know, and you may be a victim like in that moment when that thing is happening. But, you know, a day later, a week later, a year later, 10 years later, like at some point you have to be like, hey, it happened, but like, what am I going to do now?
Yeah.
You know, what am I going to do about it?
Yeah. What would you say is your biggest fear moving forward?
Just flopping at whatever I do next. Wow. Totally. Really? Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, there's a funny thing and I'm sure you experience this too. Like anything entrepreneurial that you do, you always have this irrational fear that like, it's going to be over. Like then, like, you know, like what, like whatever the next thing is going to be, it's just like, it's going to crash and burn and you know, whatever it's all going to be over. It's like, oh, this was just a fad or I got lucky or I was in the right place at the right time. And there's always like every entrepreneur I know has that kind of like lingering doubt in the back of their mind. And it's funny cause it just doesn't go away. Like my dad, He started a plastics business back in the 60s. And he's still going now. He just turned 70.
Wow.
And I talked to him once and he's like, I've been doing this almost 50 years. And he's like, I'm still I'm afraid our biggest accounts are going to leave us. I'm terrified of a lawsuit. There's a competitor could open up any day and do our formulas better. Like he's still like, yeah, it could all be over next year, you know, like, but I think a little bit of that anxiety is useful.
Yeah.
You know, it keeps you on your toes.
I feel like the way you will fail or have a failure or not as good a success the next time is if you care too much about what everyone thinks.
Yeah.
If you literally like give a
About
and try to be like, I'm going to write it in a way that like pleases everyone.
Exactly.
As opposed to being like, no, this is what I believe. This is my counterintuitive feelings on this specific topic.
Yeah.
Here's why. And you back it up.
Yeah.
I think if you were like, well, I don't care if anyone likes this.
Right.
But here's what's worked for me.
Yeah.
And here's what's worked for other people. Yeah. And I want to write it in that style. I think it'll do well.
Yeah.
So the sole art of not giving a F about, you know, relationships or money or whatever it is. I don't know. But something like that. Yeah. Or the counterintuitive approach to making money, you know, whatever it may be. So.
Yeah.
Give me credit for that next idea.
Yeah. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Royalty check.
Yeah, exactly. Is there anything that you wish people would ask you that they don't ask?
That's a really good question. It's one of those questions too. I feel like there is something, but like
you don't know what it is.
I can't. Like it's. I've probably done other interviews where I'm like, why isn't this guy asking this? But like now that I'm put on the spot, I can't think of it.
Or is there anything that you really wish you got to share or talk about that you don't reveal? I know you talk a lot about your vulnerabilities, but is there anything that you feel like you wish people knew about you more?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of an open book. I will say like I'm genuinely excited about your book. I'm not just plugging you because I'm on your show.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
I really am. I was telling you before the show, like I took a stab at writing a book like this like 5 years ago. Because I come from, you know, I got my roots are men's dating advice, basically. Yes. And, you know, so I ran like a men's dating advice site for a number of years and I worked with a lot of clients. I worked with a lot of men who were struggling. I mean, they came to me cause they were struggling with their relationships, but you know, a lot of times they're also struggling professionally and all these other ways. And doing all the research back then, like I came to a lot of the same conclusions that you do.
It's a scary topic.
It is, man.
It's super vulnerable.
It is.
Because I kind of reveal all my weaknesses in every aspect of being a man for my whole life.
But, you know, I'm glad you're the right one to do it. Because, like, the reason I gave it up, so I started it. And, you know, I had a lot of very similar conclusions and a lot of the similar points.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt weird because I was coming from, like, my big mask, as you would say, like my big thing, my big insecurity as a man was always around like I was like the party playboy, you know, like I was out drinking all the time, I was chasing girls all the time, and that was my way of like overcompensating, like proving myself all the time. And so whatever I was gonna write was gonna be rooted in that, and unfortunately like it's still just really like not socially acceptable,
right.
You know, and it's just not as like, you know, you coming from like an athletics background, coming from a business background, like those are much more, you know, and saying like, hey, like this is an issue that men deal with. Like this is something that I dealt with.
Yeah.
You know, when I was writing and it was like, hey, I spent like 5 years drinking and just banging girls. And let me tell you, it sucked. You know,
right.
It just doesn't, it didn't sound good.
Yeah.
And it wasn't something I wanted to like, it didn't feel like something that was going to like really resonate with a lot of men or like get the point across.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. And Tucker Max kind of did that with his books, but it was more of like, him bragging about it, which did well. That's what sold it so well, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then when he kind of stopped bragging about it,
yeah,
it didn't do as well.
Yeah.
You know, in
yeah,
some regards.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's still a judgment there. Yeah, there's still like, you know, oh, he's a sleazebag, you know? Like, you can't, how seriously can we take him? Yeah. And I didn't really want to invite that
right.
into my career. Right. But I also just felt like it wasn't going to be as powerful. Like, I think what's going to make yours more powerful is, you know, the stuff around, you know, because what you excelled in, the athletics and everything, like, that is, like, that's the mainstream pressure that's put on boys.
All the kids who are athletes who grew up and feeling that they couldn't, like, show their emotion. They had to, like, be a man at an early age. They couldn't be a pussy or whatever it is. You had to, like, just not feel pain. All these different things that hold us back from showing emotion, releasing certain things that allow us to be vulnerable, allow us to connect with other human beings, that create more anger and resentment inside of us for a long term, that we're unable to express it in a loving way, or in a safe way,
a healthy way.
We express it through fighting, through screaming, through punching walls, and thinking that's like the manly thing you're supposed to do,
right?
And I think I appreciate you saying that. I'm the right one to talk about it. I just feel like a lot of guys could relate to someone who looks like me, who's who's been through experiences like me.
Yeah.
As a jock-looking dude, you know, who played a ton of sports.
Yeah.
Who's, you know, built businesses and things like that. I think hopefully I'm going to be able to resonate to a lot of men.
Yeah.
That would never listen to an Oprah, a Brene Brown, a Deepak Chopra.
Yeah.
So hopefully,
yeah.
You know, I have no idea. I appreciate you endorsing it because I'm excited to get it out there. I actually think a lot of women are going to buy it. Like, tons of women are going to buy it.
Yeah. Well, actually, so I self-published. So my dating advice book, it's called Models Attract Women Through Honesty. Mm. And one of the things, like one of the biggest, I guess, like things that I guess one of the things that makes me feel the best about it is I get emails all the time from women who are like, I bought this for my brother.
Mm-hmm.
I bought this for my husband. I bought this for my son.
Yeah.
Because like this, like he's having trouble, you know, he's having relationship problems or he's having trouble meeting women. And like, there's a lot of scummy stuff out there.
Yeah.
But it's like a woman reads it and she's like, yeah, this is what the guy I love or I care about, like should be reading.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
So you'll probably get a lot of that too.
Yeah. We'll see.
Which is great.
Who knows how to do. Did you have an idea that this was going to sell a million copies? And
no.
This?
No, absolutely not.
We have no idea. It could be massive. It could be nothing.
Yeah, right.
It could be like, eh.
You really have no idea.
But I feel excited about it because I'm proud about like being so open and giving an amazing effort at trying to connect with people that I feel like are struggling the most.
Yeah.
Which are the men in our society right now, specifically with the challenges and our political leadership, where there's a lot of controversy and, you know, all the hate crimes and everything. It's just like, where is it coming from?
Yeah.
You know, how can we move forward in a place of love and uplift all of humanity? That's my mission.
Yeah.
So I feel like it starts within. I had to look within myself first and say, wow, there's probably a lot of men who are facing a similar challenge.
Yeah, there are.
I appreciate your support there.
Yeah.
This is a question called the Three Truths.
Okay.
You've written how many articles now?
Oh, God, hundreds. I don't know.
Hundreds of articles. You've got a New York Times best-selling smashing hit with a million copies sold in the first year, which probably one of 20 people have done in the history of time in the first 9 months. And let's imagine that you've achieved everything you want to achieve, which I know you don't have any big dreams. You keep it neutral. But let's say you achieve everything you want to.
Sure.
And it's your last day for you many, many years from now.
Okay.
It's your last day. You're 100 and however old you want to be.
Okay.
And you've written many best-selling projects. All the content you want to write has been out there. You've done all the research. You've got all the answers for yourself.
Yeah.
You shared it with the world. But for whatever reason, it's all erased.
Okay.
No one has access to any book you've ever done or any article.
Okay.
And you've got a piece of paper and a pen to write down three truths.
Yeah.
Three things you know to be true about everything you've learned. And this is all that the world would be able to have to remember you by.
Yeah.
What would be those lessons or those three truths?
Three, man.
No pressure.
No pressure.
Come on.
Yeah. So, I mean, the first one that comes to mind is what really, and it feels so cliche to say out loud, but it is a really profound thing. It took me a long time to realize is that really at the end of the day, what really matters is the relationships with the people in your life, you know, success, accolades, money, having fun, like these are all great things. But if you don't have people close to you to share them with or to support or help support you, pretty much anything will eventually feel empty. Mm-hmm. So that would be a big one. Second one I would say is that anything worthwhile is going to require some sort of sacrifice. And a lot of people, you know, everybody's heard that. And I think when people hear that, they think of that, they think of it in terms of like, oh yeah, sacrifice. Like you got to work hard and you got to stay at the office late. You got to like, and that's true. But I think there's actually a deeper and more difficult sacrifice, especially for our generation, which is to commit to something, to like make it meaningful and worthwhile and do it extremely well, become great at it. You have to be willing to give up maybe other dreams or things that you want. You know, there came a point in my career where I was like, you know, this writing thing is going really well. You know, that was actually what killed my music dreams, was the writing. Mm-hmm. Because it was like, the writing thing's going so well, I would be an idiot to like stop and like go start a band or something. Like, you know, it. And so I had to let it go. I had to be like, you know, it's just not going to happen. And there was a grieving process for that, but it was like, it was okay. You know, I moved on.
Yeah.
And so I think that's kind of, that's the sacrifice is like, as you, especially as you get older, you have to like realize that there's just some things that you're never going to do and that's okay. Like we all have to decide that at some point. Mm-hmm. Third one, oh my God.
Your last truth.
The last truth that Mark Manson will ever leave behind. I don't know, man. Just
don't give a f-.
Yeah, don't give a f-. I don't know. Vulnerability. A lot of stuff we've been talking about. Yeah. I guess you can always choose. Like, you always have the power to decide. You always have the power to decide, like, what something means. You always have the power to decide what to do next. There's no situation where you aren't empowered in some way.
Yeah. Those are great, man. I love those. Well, I want to acknowledge you, Mark, for constantly reinventing yourself, being open and vulnerable, and taking the time to write something that matters to you.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that it matters to so many other people as well.
Yeah.
But just your commitment to constantly doing the work.
Yeah.
You know, you've been doing this for years now and you're seeing the results come through. It's amazing. And I'm super excited for you. So I want to acknowledge you for your vulnerability by constantly opening up and showing other people how they can open up as well. Cause I think that's one of the most important things.
Yeah.
It's not trying to act like you're better than you are or more important than you are or perfect.
Yeah.
And by doing work that matters, it's really meaningful. So I acknowledge you for that, man. Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Make sure you guys get the book. We have one final question. Make sure you get The Subtle Art of Not Giving a F***. A Counterintuitive Approach to Living a Good Life by Mark Manson, the mega hit. And where do you hang out online the most, since you're not really on social media that much, but where can we connect with you and say hi and tell you how amazing this is?
So my website, markmanson.net, got all sorts of articles and cool like PDFs and ebooks and stuff. So check that out. And social media, facebook.com/markmansonnet. I actually do post there, and there will be new stuff posted there.
No, your Facebook's great. You're posting
very
a lot.
Soon. Yeah.
Mark Manson Net on Facebook.
And then if you want to come to my Instagram and
once a month, you'll get something.
And see a picture once a month. I'm there too.
Yeah, exactly. Very cool, man. Well, I'm excited for this. And the final question for you is, what's your definition of greatness?
Definition of greatness, I would say, is feeling that it's one of those things that's like, I have it in my head, but I got to get the right words to like.
Sure.
I would say my definition of greatness is simply the experience of living your potential. Having an idea or a vision, and then actually like bringing that into reality. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever it is. Could be like hosting a PTA meeting. You know, it could be writing a bestseller. It could be starting a business. It could be tutoring your kids. Like it, you know, it's having a vision for yourself and for the people you care about, and then actually like realizing that. That's what I would say.
Love it. Yeah. Mark Manson. Thanks, man. Appreciate you.
Thanks.
Boom shakalaka. There you have it. If you enjoyed this, tag me on your Instagram story right now. At Lewis Howes on your Instagram story. Take a screenshot of this podcast on your phone, or take a photo of it if you're listening to it on your computer, and tag me at Lewis Howes with the link lewishowes.com/524. Also, the full show notes, the full video interview, and other information about Mark's book is back on that link. Again, lewishowes.com/524. Let me know what you thought. Share it out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all the places. And again, let me know what you think. I hope you guys enjoyed this one, and I hope to see you in less than a month at the Summit of Greatness in Columbus, Ohio, with some of the biggest and most inspirational speakers in the world. It's going to be mind-blowing. It's going to be about 1,000 people from all over the world coming together to learn how to continue to dive into their own greatness. I hope to see you there. Make sure to give me a big hug. Say hi to me when you're there. It's going to be a blast. And like Tony Robbins said, whatever you hold in your mind on a consistent basis is exactly what you'll experience in your life. I hope you guys are holding powerful things in your mind consistently, and you know what time it is. It's time to go out there and do something great.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.